A military airstrike that apparently targeted anti-government fighters killed at least 14 people, including civilians on a meditation retreat. A pro-democracy activist said the dead villagers included elderly age 50 to 70 who were marking Buddhist Lent. I'm Dwali Saikautau, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Subaru. As part of the Subaru Loves Learning Initiative, Subaru and its retailers are partnering with AdoptAClassroom.org to provide funding to high-need schools in local communities. Subaru, more than a car company.
Well, it is just a lovely morning here on the Augustana College campus, and we are so grateful to have you with us for the conversation on WVIK. It's a celebration of local radio the way it's meant to be brewed. This week, my guest is Brett Hitchcock from Circa 21 Dinner Theater in downtown Rock Island. I'm Kai Swanson. I hope you're going to stick around for this week's episode of WVIK's The Conversation. Okay, Brett, I got to tell you, this is a first for my relatively brief tenure as host of The Conversation. I have never gone to a multi-generational guest, but I'm so grateful you're here, Brett.
Well,
thanks for being here.
Thank you for being here. Thank you for having me, I should say.
And
I'm happy to be the first second generation.
Because we had your dad, Denny Hitchcock, mm-hmm. an absolute legend, and we're going to talk more about him in a little bit. But right now, I want the spotlight on you, my friend.
All right.
Because I have known you. I don't know when I didn't know you, but yeah. It's been fun to watch you just grow in your leadership and your advocacy for the arts, for our community. That's writ small and writ large. And it's just a joy to have you here.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, of all these places around here, where did you actually grow up?
We grew up out in Sherrard.
So it was Sherrard.
It was Sherrard, yeah.
All right.
When my parents moved here in 1969, they moved here for the sole purpose of Denny having a one-year contract at Augustana.
At Augustana.
Yep. So, and my mother was a kindergarten teacher, so we moved here with the thought of doing a year. We lived in rural Sherrard, and then after that year was over, and again, I was very small at that point, but after that year was over, Augustana kept Denny on and for a few more years, and my mom got a job in town, and they decided to set up roots here, and so we have been here ever since. But Sherrard, rural Sherrard is where we have been from. So.
Right. Yeah. And now, I just was curious about the chronology. Do you have any memories of the Pitchfork Players and going down to Aledo? Do you have any memories of that?
I do not. I think it was in Viola.
Oh, Viola. It wasn't Aledo. Yep. Of course. Yep. Of course. Well, then you do have a better memory than I.
Well, from listening to Denny talk about it. So.
Right.
But I don't have any memories of that.
And I was just a kid. But my folks would not miss a show that your father was involved in. And so we would go down. I still remember a couple of the shows that went on there. And it was that beautiful old opera house that many little towns had.
Yep.
And it was sort of being held together by spit, baling twine, and good thoughts, right?
Yep,
and
that's right.
And they did some wonderful shows there. But I just thought I would check on that. How early, well, we know where the story leads to you being the leader of Circa 21, but did you ever have any thoughts of doing something different?
When I was in high school, I wanted to be a forest ranger.
All right.
I was a big outdoors person. I loved to be outdoors, and that was just something that really appealed to me. And I was thinking, you know, in my early years that maybe that's something I would love to do. And so I didn't explore it a lot. But that was the one thought I had in my head. You know, at that age, people have lots of different things about what they think they want to do or what they want to do. And that was the one thing for me. And, so I wanted to do that. And, but then as I got older, I needed something to do, to make some money. And so, of course, going to Dad was the easiest thing. And one of the things that he did, I don't want to veer off here, but...
No, Brett, this is public radio. We live for the veer off. Just veer.
Veer off here.
Take
the exit here. So, but one of the things that Denny did in my younger years was he really started me at the bottom of the barrel. I mean, I was doing jobs I was convinced he could even pay people to do. And this is where I started. And the one I usually tell is around the garden shop, which is a part of our building on the corner.
Yes.
It was a flower shop for many years. Sandy Williamson owned it and did a wonderful job with it. When she closed, or even when she was still open, I should say, and I was in high school, the windows around that part of the building are lined with copper.
That's right.
And I spent an entire summer with Tarnex and a scrub brush scrubbing this 50 years worth of tarnish off of this copper and bringing this copper back. And it was just a miserable job. It was in the middle of summer. It was hot. I was, you know, scrubbing. And I went to him at one point. I said, "Dad, this is crazy. You're not paying me hardly anything. I need more money." And he had two answers. There was two parts to this. So he said, number one, go to our Sharon, who was our business manager at that time. And she was very good as being a business manager, which means she was very good at managing the money. And he said, if you can convince Sharon that you need more money, whatever she agrees to per hour, I will go along with. I knew Sharon at that point, and I knew how good she was at her job, even in high school.
Yeah,
I didn't even bother.
Yeah.
So I just went back outside and kept scrubbing. So, and his second part was, go to school so you don't have to do this, you know, for a living. So you know you don't like it, so you have a way to change that, to make sure you don't, and this is the path. So no, I'm not going to pay you more, and get back out there and go to school. So I really started at the bottom, and I think that was... That learning experience was probably more valuable than books. I don't want to certainly discount college, but certainly more valuable than being in a classroom and learning, you know, real world experience. And I'm not saying that scrubbing Tarnex is that complicated, but just introducing myself into the business and just starting at the very bottom and working your way up.
One of the things I'm very grateful for about the career I've had a chance to have at Augustana is that I am grateful for the fact that I started 40 years ago with an hourly job paid minimum wage, not as a student worker. This was after I graduated. And somehow this fellow named Wooten, who started the station, he had this, I don't know, this Kevorka over me, and he wrote me in. But I'm grateful that really the first decade I was hourly staff. And so you have a perspective of an organization, an enterprise, and its mission that is different than those who may not have had the opportunity to work an hourly job, right?
Absolutely.
So I'm sure that now where you are now, that informs a lot of what you're able to do and bring the team forward to do for you.
Absolutely. And one of my philosophies is I will never ask an employee to do something that I won't do myself.
There you go.
You know, so getting out and scrubbing windows, you know, dealing with these disgusting jobs that sometimes come with an older building and pipes backing up and things like that that I've had to do lots of times, but I would never... changing sets when it's 10 below zero out and bringing things in and out. But I would never ask anybody to do anything there that I wouldn't be willing to do myself.
Well, I hope everybody who's listening has had a chance to go to Circa 21. You can find out what's going on currently and in the future by going to
circa21.com.
Circa21.com.
Correct.
And we're going to get into your current production here for a little bit. But I am grateful that I had the opportunity to help Natalie Linville Mass and the Quad Cities Passport Program.
Absolutely.
If you're not familiar with this building, it's absolutely beautiful. It was constructed as the Fort Theater more than 100 years ago. And they've dedicated one episode of this Passport. And you can stand right out in front of the building and there's a sign there that tells you text. You can hear a little audio file. I learned so much about the building because of that, because it was the gem. It was the gem that you were going to find the best performance space between Chicago and probably Denver.
Yeah.
Right. And it was just what a heyday it must have had.
It was a really prominent theater and its day. I mean, there were lots of people that attended productions. I mean, Roy Rogers, Gene Autry, Dale Evans, I mean, just to name a few, all came through for movie premieres there. And so it really was the place to be, back in the day. And it's funny now, we have lots of people all the time that will come to the theater and say, I grew up in the Quad Cities. And I used to come here as a kid.
Yep.
You know, and I remember coming here with movies with my parents or we came here on a date. Or we'll have people that'll even admit, you know, we used to climb up the fire escapes and sneak in the balcony and watch movies. So, I mean, but it holds such a special place for so many local residents who remember going there when they were younger with their parents to see movies.
Yeah, And it went through some rough years your dad got involved. Yep. And but I will never forget the first show I saw there. I think it was still in the 70s, was Fiddler on the Roof. And you just finished a wonderful run of that show.
Yep.
But what was really neat was we came over from the nearby junior high school in downtown Rock Island. And he arranged for us to have a little mini combat acting class, right? Stage combat.
Yep.
There in that the upper lobby,
the salon area.
Yeah. Right.
Yep.
Such good memories, and I'm grateful now that my both my children and my grandchildren have memories that will take them from their childhood on.
Yeah.
We take the local grandkids to the kids' Christmas show every year and have a ball.
Yep.
So grateful for all those things that you do. But the building itself is, oh my gosh, so much fun. But you've expanded. I mean, you mentioned that, I mean, that building included the corner shop, which I think was that where Hickey's was originally
Hickey Brothers
located?
Was in there for many years,
So fancy cigar shop becomes
Correct.
A lovely flower shop and all that. But the footprint is expanding.
Yeah. It is. So, you know, Denny was able to acquire a couple of the buildings that were right next to Circa. The main use for that was in the early years of acquiring that building, he was doing murder mysteries, similar to what Scott Nauman does, you know, and does a wonderful job with. And so Denny was doing those in there with big round tables and just as another way to kind of as an audience development tool for Circa, you know, so you get people in that may want to come for that kind of entertainment, but then perhaps you would be able to take them, move them over to Circa and get them interested in coming to Circa on a regular basis.
Sure.
And so started doing that. And then he was attending a theater conference in the Milwaukee area. And one of the presenters at this conference was a guy named Dick Chudnow that had this new thing called Comedy Sports, which was this improv,
comedy
troupe. And so Denny looked at that and he thought, I think that would work well in the Quad Cities, and I think I have the perfect building for it. And so, lo and behold, he bought the franchise, brought it in, and, you know, we had that in that building for 20-plus years until the split. And but that, again, was another audience development tool, because improv comedy is a wonderful thing, and it's great for the whole family,
sure.
and especially
sure,
with
sure,
comedy
sure.
sports being family-friendly. And
yeah.
Bob Kelly now has done a wonderful job with it, keeping it going in Moline.
Yeah.
And so... But that, again, was an audience development tool. That was his whole mindset, is that he would bring in these young kids, have them experience this, and then hopefully transplant them over to Circa, or to get their parents, who may not have been to Circa before, to come over and see this and say, well, maybe this isn't so bad. Maybe we should try next door and go to the dinner theater and see what that has to offer.
And there's still fun stuff that happens all over. Yeah. And, well, I want to talk to you about the audience and the audience that you see at Circa 21, because... As you mentioned, I mean, there's a lot of family memories around there.
Yep.
This is one thing. When I was in my 20s, I didn't know how to fill out a 1040. So it was the 1040 EZ. So I mean, it couldn't be any easier,
than that.
You know, because, when you're making that kind of money, you know. But I was never sure of myself. So we had a little tradition. My mother would do it. She'd fill it out.
Yeah.
And then the pay was I would take her to an evening at Circa.
That was the trade-off.
That was my accountancy fee
there. You go.
So, and then I mentioned taking kids, grandkids, and there's so many, I know through Facebook, so many folks in the Quad Cities are just really steady believers. But you bring in a lot of people from out of town that I don't think people appreciate how that happens. I mean, there's whole buses.
Yeah.
How do those happen, and how do you find about them, and they find out about you?
Well, we have a full-time staff member that's dedicated to just simply doing that.
Mm.
And so it's working closely with the Quad City Convention and Visitors Bureau, or Visit Quad Cities. It's working with the Chamber, and it's putting a lot of time and effort into it ourselves. A lot of resources go into that. There's some national trade shows that Holly, our group sales director, will go out to, where you meet with these owners of these bus companies, and you make your pitch. And luckily for us, the attendees or the riders on these motor coaches are typically more older folks. And, you know, on a bus that comes to Circa, you know, may have 50 people on it, and it'll be 48 widows and two guys, you know, that are still kicking. But that's usually the mix. And so, you know, you're going and being able to meet these people. And one of the things that they love kind of universally is dinner theater, because you can knock out two things at once. You can knock out a meal, and you can knock out your evening entertainment all at one time. And so the bus companies love it. The seniors love it, because it's one less trip in and out of the bus that you have to make going somewhere.
Right.
And so, you know, it's it tends to be an easy sell for her, where she can go in and just make the pitch and we can get them. But it does take time. And again, it's working with your partners. We work again with Visit Quad Cities. We work with others in the area that bring in a lot of coaches like Celebration Bell and Moline.
Yes, right.
And so we are working together and building packages to try to get people into the Quad Cities.
Yeah.
And to get them, especially to get them to stay.
Yeah.
A lot of our groups are called day trippers. You know, they're coming in, from the Peoria area or from southern Wisconsin or from, you know, Iowa City, Cedar Rapids area. But they're coming in just for us and they're turning around and going back to their home. But we try to get them to come in to stay too. And we find that works a little bit better in the fall because a lot of people like to come to the river for fall foliage. And
then
Celebration Bell is very popular too. But just to be on the river and see that change in the trees and the leaves. And so it does bring a lot of people in. So we do find that we get more people that come in the fall that are staying and doing other things in the Quad Cities.
Whether
that's 1 day or 2 days. But a lot of it is just, you know, working on those day trips and having them come in. But that's a huge part of our business now.
It's about
30%
of
the business are those people that are coming in from outside. And we call it outside 50 miles.
Yeah.
So 50 miles and out. And that's a big, important part of the business.
And I want to get to that, another aspect of that in a minute. But friends, if you heard that noise just a minute, I know in theater you have to maintain the illusion, but I got to be realistic here at the good old WVIK. One of the chairs in the studio just sort of cracked a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I'm very nervous about that because we are down to the last functioning broadcast studio in the building.
Nothing
can happen here. So if suddenly things go dark, well, send a text to Jared Johnson, our GM, and we'll do our best. But anyway, you're fine.
Yes, everything is good.
And there's even a spare chair if we need it,
correct,
but hopefully we won't.
That's right.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about, Brett, though, or get you to tell me about, and I will invite you to brag about, is it's no secret that I'm somewhat of a partisan for Rock Island. It's the one of this beautiful melange of cities known as the Quad Cities. It's by chance the one that I got to grow up in, and I love the joint. But it's a constant battle to get people from other parts of the Quad Cities to come to downtown Rock Island. We've made some headway. I remember those years in the 70s and 80s when really that was the only reason to come downtown was Circa, right?
Yeah.
And now there's a lot more diversity in that. But that ability to continue to draw people who for the rest of the year probably won't cross the Rock Island city line and you get them to Circa. And I'm just grateful for you doing that. And are there tricks to doing that?
Being consistent, being consistent in the product that we put out there. You know, when people come, you know, they enjoy the full experience. And, you know, really for us, what we're in the business of is we're like a 3-hour escape from all the insanity that's going on in the world, you know, and especially these days, you know, and people, you know, every time you turn on your TV or you turn on your radio, all you're being fed is just, you know, a lot of negative stuff. And so we find that we're a great 3-hour escape. And I think that's one of the reasons why we have been successful in maybe drawing people that may not, you know, have another reason to come into Rock Island, but to come see us for that escape. They can just get away from reality for 3 hours and just be entertained. They don't have to think about, they don't have to think real hard. You know, we're not doing real heavy pieces.
Yeah.
So they can come in, they can sit back, have the drink, and just an enjoyable evening with, you know, a wife or with their family. And I think that's one of the things that has helped over the years bring people in. Because we still know we have people that will call that won't know where we're at. And that river still can be a divide.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are some people, there are some Iowa people that won't come to Illinois unless they absolutely have to and vice versa. I'm sure there's some Illinois people that don't like to go over to Iowa. Yeah. But it's just crazy because we all are one community.
Exactly.
And there's no reason not to support everything. And I think this is an exciting time in Rock Island.
It is.
Because of all of the investment that the city has made in the downtown and so many people of a certain age remember when it was the district.
Sure.
In the 90s and it would be 20,000 people down there for Jamaica My Weekend and Gumbo Yaya.
Right.
And they would just bring such critical mass down there. And once that left and a lot of the bar scene left, you know, we kind of went through a down phase there where that area, that two block area, you know, other than anchor businesses like Quad City Arts and some of those others that have been there for a long time, were still there. But there wasn't a lot of reason to come down. And I think that they struggled for several years to try to figure out how to fill that. Now, Terry Tilka, former owner of Ribco, was still doing stuff. And Kyle Peters, who owned the Daiquiri Factory, was still putting on some concerts at that time. He was he was still in Rock Island and doing some things. But it needed a facelift. I mean, we were behind the three other downtown, other downtowns.
Sure.
And so it was time for Rock Island to step up. And I think they did.
Oh, with the new alliance. I mean, I love going. I was downtown a lot last weekend for the Alternating Currents.
Yes.
And when you see the staff all wearing those bright red shirts, and they're usually with their little petty vehicle, P-E-D-I, not petty. and they're taking care of guests.
Yes.
They're smiling. They're interacting. They're saying, welcome to Rock Island. What can I help you find? And I got to put in a plug. Have you been to Blue Collar Bagels?
Yes.
I could put on 50 pounds if I did not, you know, because that is the best bagel in that I've had in the 61201 in a long, long time.
Absolutely.
It's perfect.
Yep. And it's great. And I've been in there a few times now, and they've been busy every time.
Oh, they
are. And that's what we need in the downtown.
Yeah,
you know, we don't need another string of bars. We're past that now. That's the history of Rock Island.
Yeah.
Now we need new businesses. We need another restaurant like Le Figaro's.
Yes.
Le Figaro's was another anchor restaurant down there for so many years. That was, and you know, my dad still says that Le Figaro's was the best restaurant in town when Rashid was open for all those years. And that's the kind of stuff we need. We just need more of those anchor businesses to drive that traffic into downtown.
Well, and if there is that little bit of a vacuum that we used to have more reasons to be outdoors downtown, I want to thank you, too, for the Marquee Concert Series.
Yes.
Any on the future on the schedule so far? And just explain what they are, by the way.
Back in 2020-21, when everything was closed, you know, we were... As everybody, I mean, we basically laid off our entire staff with the exception of three. It was Danny and I and our business manager. We were the only three that were left. And while there were some, you know, we knew that there was some federal stuff in the works and most of the people, you know, we had several million dollars worth of tickets sold for that season. And so people were, when we had to call them and say, okay, this is the situation, what would you like to do? Almost everybody said, keep the money. And when you reopen, we'll be back.
Oh.
But we don't want you to go away. We want you to be here when we come out of this. And so for that reason, we'll do that. Well, that was wonderful. And that probably kept us open during that time. It kept us, you know, operational to a certain degree. But we started to come up with what else can we do that we could actually still have a show? Because we were, once we reopened, because we weren't classified as a restaurant within the state, we were classified as a theater, we could only seat 50 guests. That was the max. Mm. And so, you know, we seat 330. And so we were trying to get reclassified as a restaurant so we could do 50% and then just social distance. That didn't work. So so this Music in the Marquee idea had come up. And we had discussed it many years before and it didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
And I believe Tristan Tapscott is the one that brought it up. And he said, hey, why don't you revisit that again? And we thought, perfect. It's outdoors. People can spread out. You know, if you're uncomfortable going inside, it's not going to matter.
So
we started doing that. And I think we sold out that first show within a matter of hours. Once we announced it, people just flooded in. And we thought... You know, this is something that is unique that no one else in town is doing.
No.
And why does this can be one of our signature events annually? And so we have kept it going, minus the last year or so with all the construction and the improvements in downtown. But we did it again this year. And it was a huge success. And we are planning on another one for next year, too. But it's just the actors enjoy it. Because it's something so completely different for them. And, and again, if you haven't attended it before, the audience, we block off the street in front of the theater and we invite guests to bring their own lawn chairs and they can sit down right in the middle of the street and they just watch up on the marquee. We have amplification out there. We have our chef grilling food out there. We have a bar open in the speakeasy. So people can come down and just have a great evening.
And it always is a great evening at Circa 21. And we're going to find out more about what's in prospect at Circa 21 in just a moment. You're listening to The Conversation on WVIK. My guest is Brett Hitchcock, and friends, please stay tuned.
Hey, Quad Cities NPR comes from the Regional Development Authority, distributing funds from the Rhythm City Casino Resort to help make the Quad Cities a more vibrant and inclusive community. Learn more at rdauthority.org. Support also comes from the Bucktown Americana Music Show, a family-friendly live folk music series. The 9-show season begins in September with shows on the third Friday of each month at 7 p.m. at the Rock Island Library Midtown Branch. Season tickets information at bucktownamericana.com. And support for WVIK also comes from J.P. Morgan Chase, serving the people, neighborhoods, and businesses of Iowa for over 35 years. More at jpmorganchase.com/Iowa. J.P. Morgan Chase Bank, N.A. Member FDIC.
And welcome back to The Conversation. My guest this week is Brett Hitchcock from Circa 21 in downtown Rock Island. And my goodness, I'm having a ball chatting about and bringing up all these great ideas. So I did want to ask, though, is there another marquee concert scheduled yet? Or
there is not. We're going to be doing one next year. So we just haven't announced it yet.
But let's talk about what is happening right now, which is very exciting. Mm-hmm. And you're doing The Wizard of Oz.
Yes.
As a stage musical, right?
Yep.
And I gotta tip my hat to you because some of the promotions that you've been doing sort of on social media, and when you went out to the zoo and the cast, well, Dorothy and her buddies went to the Lizard of Oz.
Yes.
Just genius. That's genius, Brett.
Yeah.
But tell me about the production.
Yeah, it's a wonderful production that people have really enjoyed. And we did the show about 15 years ago was the last time we did it. And as we go through the process of picking shows every year, we'd like to give a show like 6 years or so in between. But this was one that was starting to come up. Some of our peers around the country were starting to do it again, and it was doing really well everywhere it was being done.
Yeah.
And so about a year and a half ago, it came up and thought, I wonder if we should do Wizard of Oz. And Denny decided to go ahead. We have a committee that sits down and talks about this, but ultimately he makes the decision. But he decided that he wanted to do it again. And so we have remounted it. And it's doing wonderful. And the cast is amazing. And the marketing things that you talked about, I do want to, we have a marketing group that gets together. And I know I've mentioned him before. We've been lucky to be able to bring Tristan Tapscott on staff.
Genius.
And so Tristan is wonderful because he is, with the things that he does, he's used to using social media as his main source of promotion. And so he has a lot of creative ideas. So his ideas with our existing staff together is really, I'm going to tip my hat to Tristan because the social media stuff is really good right now. I'm going to toot our own horn here, but and we've heard from our peers. We have like monthly meetings with this National Dinner Theater group that we belong to, and almost every month somebody will say, "Hey, you guys are doing, your social is just kicking it right now. You're killing it. So just keep doing what you're doing." And that's great to hear because we are a smaller operation than most of these other theaters. They're in much larger markets. I think we're probably in one of the smaller markets in this group. But to get that kind of confirmation from your peers that have much larger staffs that are doing things that what we're doing here in Rock Island and the kind of promotion we're doing is really resonating and it's creative and it's drawing people's attention. And we're seeing that in the numbers.
Yeah.
Tons of people are watching the videos and
well, and what I want to let people know is this show is going to be on until September 5th,
yes,
but are there tickets still available?
Absolutely.
I mean, okay, good.
Yeah.
Good. Because I know you guys, some of these shows just sell out so fast.
They do.
Crazy.
And this one has been doing really well. And we always see a surge of people the last couple of weeks.
Of course.
That have been kind of waiting in the weeds or, wanting to see if something's going to come up or, occasionally we'll do a discount for something. But when a show's rolling like this, we usually we won't do any discounts. Yeah. And so we have some people that are waiting back to see if something like that's going to pop up. And when it doesn't, then they kind of pour in at the last minute. So if you don't wait and you can get your tickets online at circa21.com and you can go there to reserve online or you can call our ticket office and get tickets that way as well.
So one of the great features of Circa 21 are the bootleggers.
Yeah.
And these are the staff that take care of everybody who comes into the theater, but they are very gifted performers.
Yes.
I know when you go online, you pick tables. Do people pick their favorite bootlegger and try to be in their zone?
There are certainly some that do have their favorite bootleggers and it's in their customer account. Bootlegger, Kirsten Sindelar is a popular one, Nick Munson. Yeah. I don't want to run down the list, but all of them have people that will request them because again, I think it all goes back to the atmosphere that Denny wanted to build, which is a family atmosphere.
Yeah.
And we don't see a lot of changeover as much as a lot of businesses. So people get to know these waiters over, a decade or so. And so, you become familiar with them. You learn about them. You learn about their families. And so there is a real connection there. And I think that's why when people come in, a lot of them do request specific bootleggers.
Sure. Just out of curiosity, who writes their shows? Because they're always so clever.
There's a group of people, Brad Hoskins, who's been a long time, an Augie grad as well. But Brad was involved with a lot of those for many, many years. And we have our new head bootlegger now, Micah Burness, is responsible Festival, and his wife, Kelsey, are a lot of the ones that are putting it together. But it's a real collaborative group. So they'll open it up to some of the other bootleggers too. Some of the other bootleggers may choreograph it. Some may be involved with trying to pick the songs. There's always a theme, and they come up with the themes together, the waiters do, and then just trying to plug in the specific input and trying to drive that. But
so fun.
They're a wonderful group, and there's only one other dinner theater in the country that has a performing wait staff like the Bootleggers. And it's the Derby Dinner Playhouse, which is in Clarksville, Indiana. It's a suburb of Louisville.
Yeah.
Theirs are called the Barnstormers. But the Barnstormers and the Bootleggers are the only two performing wait staffs at dinner theaters in the country.
I didn't know that. That's
and
genius.
A lot of these people, a lot of the waiters or the bootleggers also have either vocal degrees or they have musical theater degrees.
Sure.
So they're trained as well. And we've had bootleggers go off to do Sarah Hayes, who was a bootlegger for us for many years. She starred in some shows for us. She did a year-long tour, and she was one of the bootleggers.
Yeah.
And so we've had other bootleggers over the years. Dean Banowitz, from many, many years ago, his family was from Maquoketa.
Yes, Banowitz family.
Yep, and he had a hair thing down in the district. He was a hair salon stylist.
Yeah.
And so he moved to L.A. and started working for Ryan Seacrest and was doing Seacrest stuff in the early years and some shows with him. And so we've had bootleggers that have gone on to do great things, but it's a wonderful group. I mean, not only, as you said, they're not only serving you dinner and doing all that, but then they're getting up on stage after running around with dinner and then doing a 15-minute pre-show for you and then getting right back off stage and waiting on you again.
And sometimes they're in the show.
Yes, sometimes they're in the show as well.
Crazy. Let's talk about the show here for a minute. Yeah. I know that in the spirit of Wizard of Oz, we should not look behind the curtain, but I'm going to ask you to lift the curtain a little bit. So this show opened July 8th, runs through September 5th, Wizard of Oz. Mm-hmm. But let's go back. You mentioned when it was first kind of discussed. Could you take us through the arc of the idea or maybe the green light from Denny or even a little before to opening night? What all has to happen?
There's so much. I mean, it starts years in advance. And, so once we decide on the show, then the next objective is usually to get the production team in place. Now, a lot of those folks, when you're talking about the scenic designer and the costume designer, a lot of those are resident staff members for us already. But we do bring in a lot of directors, from outside of the area, as well as actors and other scenic designers and things like that. And so it's a matter of starting to get that group in place first, specifically the director. And then once the director's in place, then the whole process of the vision of the director starts to come in. And so then there's meetings with the costume designer. What are we looking for here? What are you going for? So the costume designer knows how to proceed with costumes and designing costumes and props. What are we going to do with all this? Are we going to get this prop list together? What are we going to do for scenery? What are we going to do for set? Hiring these people, getting them to create their vision after talking to the director and getting approval for all this starts way in advance. And then, there's the acting part.
Yeah.
And for many years, Denny would go to New York 4 or 5 times a year to hire actors. And just with the cost of that, the cost of flying to Manhattan, staying in Manhattan for 4 or 5 days with hotel and having to rent a facility for auditions, having to, rent a piano player, an accompanist to play, it just got so expensive that when the online boom started, there's so many ways now to get actors online. Mm-hmm. There's websites you can go to that you can submit the role that you're looking for, and they will send you, hundreds of applications of actors from all over the country that will fill that. And then again, it's going back, the director and the production manager and Denny all get involved and decide, who they feel would be best for each role. And one of the things that a lot of directors like with Denny is that Denny gives them a lot of control.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of saying at the end of the day, well, I don't like your idea, I want to use my idea, or I want to use this guy instead. The director might like this, but I want to use this. It's not what he does. And I think that's why a lot of directors like coming into work for him, because he does give them a lot of creative freedom to put this together the way they want to put it together.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as we get closer, the set's got to, we can make sure that we're online with the set, that everything's happening with that, getting the lighting designer set up, making sure the director talks to the lighting designer so we know what we're doing as far as lights. And then once they get into town, then we're getting close. So the actors fly in from wherever they're coming in from and we get rolling.
What is that distance like? Because I'm always fascinated, say, with the Quad City Symphony Orchestra, that they'll only get a chance to play together. I mean, they've got to come prepared.
Sure.
And so they get like two chances to play together, and then we're going on.
Right.
How much time between arrival of the cast and opening night, usually?
Well, it's similar to the symphony. You know, they get the materials in advance, so the expectation is the same as a symphony. Once you get into town, you know your lines, you know the music. Then it's up to our resident, wonderful resident musical director, Ron May, who is a legend in town. So Ron gets a hold of them and puts it all together musically. But our entire rehearsal process is 2 weeks.
Wow.
That's it. From the time they touch ground, they touch down at Quad City International Airport to the time that they're on stage doing the entire show is 2 weeks.
Two weeks.
And so oftentimes we set the rehearsal schedules like 10 to 10, 10 in the morning till 10 at night.
Holy
oftentimes
moly.
They don't need that much because, again, you're dealing with professionals. You're dealing with people that this is Walt. They don't have anything else going on, so they can dedicate all of their energy and focus to the show.
Yeah.
And so oftentimes they don't need that 12 hours, you know, especially as we get further into the process, but they come prepared and it doesn't matter, you know, whether it's winter or summer or whatever the case is, they're here and they're going. And it's really a fascinating thing to watch it come together that quickly.
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating to be in the audience, and it's even more to get some of this insight from my guest, Brett Hitchcock from Circa 21 Dinner Theater. This is the time, though, Brett, we have to step aside for just a moment because you tell a very good story, but so does the host of Rock Island Lines.
Yes,
late,
he does.
The great Dr. Roald Tweet.
Absolutely.
This is Roald Tweet on Rock Island. Samuel Benedict Reed was only one of thousands of Yankees who answered the call to seek their fortunes in the newly opened lands to the west in the 1840s, but he may have been the only one who got there a mile at a time. Reed was born in Vermont in 1818. In a country rushing to send civilization west via new roads, bridges, canals, and waterways, Reed chose the perfect occupation. He became a civil engineer. His first project in 1841 was an enlargement of the old Erie Canal. When that was finished, he was a bit further west than where he had begun. Then Reed turned to the newfangled invention, the railroad. In 1846, he surveyed the Michigan Central Line from Kalamazoo to Matwan, becoming division engineer of that road. He was even further west. Now he became engineer of the Michigan Southern and Northern Indiana Railroad, the first railroad to reach Chicago. So far, so good. Reed next took a job as the locating engineer for a rail line from Chicago west to Joliet in 1852, and then took charge of construction of the Chicago and Rock Island Railroad lines, which, in 1854, became the first railroad in the United States to reach the Mississippi River. The Great River was only a temporary obstacle. After taking a short break to marry Miss Jane Earle of Geneseo, Illinois in 1855, Samuel Reed selected the site for the first bridge across the Mississippi, and soon the railroad became the Chicago, Rock Island, and Pacific Railroad, later the Rock Island Lines. The Pacific, of course, was still a dream, but not for long. Reed next surveyed the route from Davenport west to Washington, Iowa. By the time Samuel Reed reached the Pacific coast, he was chief of construction for the Union Pacific Railroad. In 1869, these tracks met those from the east at Promontory, Utah, fulfilling Columbus's dream of a route to the Indies. People like Samuel Reed deserve their own monument, if only we could figure out where to put it, or what he looked like. He didn't move very fast, but he never sat still long enough for a portrait.
Production of A Grand Excursion on Rock Island Lines was made possible by Humanities Iowa, the Illinois Humanities Council, the National Endowment for the Humanities, and the Illinois General Assembly.
Another great chapter in the long story of Roald Tweet, Rock Island Lines, and WVIK. And we get to tap into that story each and every week thanks to you and your support of WVIK. You can head over to WVIK.org right now. And if you make a donation when that Become a Member button pops up, well, guess what? You might help get us back into our main studio because we're still sitting in the newsroom right now. There we go. And my guest is Brett Hitchcock. And I'm just loving these stories of Circa 21. An absolute gem in the Quad Cities region. People come from all over to be part of this. And I'm, of course, excited by the current show, Wizard of Oz. But what are you looking forward to in the future?
Yeah, we are really excited in November to kick off the 50th anniversary season. And it's a real feather in the cap, Denny, to have this thing be going this long. I think I was mentioning to you just quickly earlier that it's not uncommon when we speak to like Rotary groups or Kiwanis groups that a retired banker will come up after it's over and will say, your dad came to us looking for money when he was trying to do this. And we thought he was nuts because you're taking two businesses that have a high propensity of failure, which is restaurants and theaters, and you want to combine them into one and you want us to help you finance this. And so it's a real credit to him that 50 years later, we're still here, you know, when there was so much doubt in the beginning. And so planning for this started a while ago. And Denny's thought with this was that we wanted to have kind of a celebration of some of the shows that have been huge hits over the years for us, or some that have been more fan favorites, and then sprinkling in one on the end that we haven't done before, but is a newer title that's become available that a lot of people know. And so we're starting off with A Christmas Carol in December. And so this will be the first time that we've ever done Christmas Carol as a main stage show.
Oh,
we've done it as a kids show, but this is a full... The Alan Menken version, the one that was on Broadway. So it's a big version, and we're really excited about starting the year with that. And then in January and February, going into Million Dollar Quartet, which, of course, is a hugely popular show. If you're not familiar with it, it covers the music of Johnny Cash, Elvis Presley, Carl Perkins, and Jerry Lee Lewis. It's a true story about one night at Sun Record Studio when these guys came together and had a big jam session. And then following that up with Oklahoma. Which is an old classic that everybody loves.
Of course.
And then speaking of another show that everybody loves, Mamma Mia.
Mm.
We've done it twice. It's done huge, and everybody loves the music of ABBA. And, you know, I don't know how great the storyline is, but people aren't coming to watch the storyline. They're coming to hear the music. And so we're really happy about being able to get Mamma Mia back next year. And then Annie. Annie was Denny's first really big hit in 1984. That was the one that really broke the bank for the first time for him and made a lot of money on it. And so it only seemed appropriate that be part of this season too. Yeah. Yeah. And then again, the last one is Pretty Woman. Mm. And that's one we have never done before. And again, it's just become available recently. A lot of our peers have done it.
Sure.
It's done really well. So we put one there on the end next fall that is new. But other than that, it's a season full of memories and shows that have been really popular over the 50 years. And, you know, we're in our season ticket campaign right now. And what we'd like to tell people is that, you know, again, as we've said before, we're kind of an escape. So if you're looking for a 2 to 3 hour escape from reality and just coming in and just being able to just let it all go and just focus on what's there on stage and nothing else. It's really a wonderful opportunity for that.
But it's really more than that, Brett. And I want to ask you about that. So we have so many escapes and this little device in our pockets that people will take 1,000 escapes during the course of a day.
Yeah.
And what is it in your experience about the fact that we gather together and we jointly experience not something even on a screen? I was gratified to be in a room full of people to watch the Odyssey, but the people on the stage are their hearts are beating along with yours, and to be in the presence of the live craftsmanship, why is that so much more impactful? And it's a pity that people have forgotten about that and they don't get out as much. But when they go, they're always like, wow, what is it about that qualitative difference?
I think it's seeing that person on stage and being able to, you know, there's nothing, you know, something happens. There's no TV break. There's nothing to cut out. You're there. You're live. You're seeing it. Whatever happens.
Yeah.
And I think that people enjoy that. And again, I think people, as you said before, we have so much opportunity already to watch things on our phones, on TV screens, on computer screens. Sometimes a lot of times I think people want to see live people. They don't want to be watching something on TV or watching a show on YouTube or paying a fee to watch a streaming fee or something to watch a show. They want to see it live. They want to be in that in that room and feel that energy that's coming. And there is a real energy between the actors on stage and an audience, especially with a show like Wizard of Oz right now. There's just so much energy. People know the songs and they're coming dressed up as characters in the show. And I think you wouldn't get that if you were there just watching it on a big screen.
Sure.
But when you're there with live actors on stage, it's just a different experience. And
right.
I think that people really, they gravitate towards that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I recall distinctly going to see your production of The Bridges of Madison County, which was a great movie, and everybody loved it. I never saw it. I was not their target demographic.
Yep.
My spouse had, of course. But going to see that at Circa with the incomparable Jenny Wynn, I mean, amazing.
Yep.
It was a totally different experience. I don't need to see the movie. I mean, I suppose I should.
Yeah.
But I don't need to see that.
Yeah.
So anyway, if we want to get in on this 50th season, also at the website, we can just go and
take
care of it.
Circa21.com. You can buy season tickets there, or you can buy individual tickets there too. And what we tell people is that if you are a regular attendee, even if you attend two or three times a year, you're going to be money ahead by becoming a season ticket holder. And again, at the website, circa21.com, everything is laid out there as far as what the different subscription packages are. We have like one to kind of fit everybody's needs.
Yeah.
And you can purchase them there, and you can be part of what we are doing going forward, and just know that you have this all lined up and ready to go.
Well, you mentioned something interesting, and that was the turning point, the inflection point of Annie in 1984.
Yeah.
And it's hard to describe this to younger folks, but what happened in this community, the Quad Cities, of course, but downtown Rock Island, between in the 5 or 10 years after the Farmall plant closed in 83, it's hard to describe what that was like.
Yeah.
And the fact that was when the turning point really came. Because the last lights on in downtown Rock Island for a good long while were Circa 21s. Until we started to come out. And folks like Terry Tilka, that you mentioned before, and others who, Dan Carmody, really kept it going.
Yep.
And I am grateful, because I know the news release went out yesterday, that Circa's founder is going to get a little special recognition.
Yeah, it's really neat. The city, in conjunction with the St. Patrick's. I'm off here.
Oh,
the Labor Day.
Labor Day parade,
But the city has this as well, where they honor people every year in a number of different categories. And Denny was nominated and won this year for Artist in Rock Island. And again, it's all tied into going into the 50th anniversary.
Yeah.
And so it's really something that we wanted to do this year and to focus on to try to give Denny the credit and let him have this at 50 years, where so many people doubted that he could do it. And there were many years where Denny doubted that he could do it or that he could keep it going. Some of those were in the 80s, as we were just talking about, when it was really, really tough. And he wasn't sure if they were to keep it going. And every time something like that has come up, someone always comes out of the woodwork. It's like an angel that comes out of nowhere that helps out. We had a former subscriber probably 10, 15 years ago that was from Geneseo. It was Mabel Brown. She was an attorney. And we were going through one of these times where it was really rough. And Mabel called Denny and said, "Listen, I love Circa 21. I've been a subscriber for years. It's one of the things that brings me great pleasure in my life. I would like to loan you some money at basically almost a 0% interest, to help you keep this going." And so every time something like that has happened, and it's happened a few times over the years, the community always steps up and always helps us out and keeps us going. Mm. And, again, I think that you look at these, this roller coaster ride that we've been on for 50 years, and it's the city of Rock Island has been wonderful over the years, or these individual customers, or as we talked about during COVID, the money that we had in tickets, people didn't want it back.
Right.
They said, "You just hang on to it for now, and we want to ensure that when COVID ends, that you are still there, that we can come see you then, and then we'll use our credit. But until then, you keep that and you make sure that you're here."
so amazing.
Yeah, it's just a wonderful thing, the support this community has given us.
Yeah, I'm going to put you on a spot in a minute, and but I'll give you a warning first that I'm always intrigued by what interesting people do in their off time, if there's something you're reading or watching or enjoying that you want to tell us about. So give a second to think about it.
Sure.
But I also want to think about a past Citizen of the Year in Rock Island. I don't normally plug shows 2 weeks out, Brett, but... September 5th, 2 weeks from today, my guest will be Don Wooten.
Oh.
And we will have to make some a little special arrangements, so stay tuned, friends. But Don Wooten will be the guest on The Conversation 2 weeks from now, September 5th. And I just want to give you a heads up on that. So you better red letter that date, because it's a wonderful opportunity to chat with him. So I gave you a couple of minutes to think about it. What are some things that you're enjoying that you'd like to share with us? It could be a restaurant. It could be whatever you want.
Outside of theater, what I enjoy doing is spending time with my 11-year-old.
Aww.
And he's a very sports-centric kid, so he plays on a travel baseball team, so I do a lot of travel baseball stuff, and we are both big sports fanatics. So we go to a lot of sporting events. We're going to a Cubs game next Sunday on the 30th. So
those are some of my best memories growing up, going with my old man to Wrigley.
Yep. So we're doing this. Is the first time we're going to Wrigley together, but I'm a huge Minnesota sports fan. So we've been to Vikings fans. We've been to Vikings games together. We've been to Twins games together. We were at Timberwolves game a couple years ago. So I really enjoy doing that. I also am a big sports memorabilia collector. I love collecting sports memorabilia and sports cards. And so that is something that my dad and Alex, my son, and I all do together, which is really a special thing. You know, we go to card shows and we'll buy cards and we all have our collections. And that is a really special thing. So those are the kinds of things I love to do. The other thing is our winter hobby, which is racing sled dogs.
So that's still part of the story?
Absolutely.
I remember your dad doing that when I was a kid.
Well, my dad started doing that when both my parents are from the St. Paul area originally. And so my dad started doing it in high school. His high school homeroom teacher had about 100 dogs at the time. And she was looking for students to come out to practice or to just see if they were interested in doing it. And Danny was a huge outdoor guy at that time. He was a Boy Scout. And so he went to do it and got hooked in high school and has been doing it ever since. So we are still doing it all these years later. So we train in the fall out in our fields around rural Sherrard. We have a side-by-side that the dogs will turn it on and drive it behind them, but we'll work on training them on wheels until we can get to snow. And then we go to sleds, and our racing circuit is primarily in Wisconsin. Every once in a while, one in Minnesota, once in Michigan. But it's been more difficult as our climate has changed to have snow in the winter.
Exactly.
And so a lot of those races have been canceled. And so there's a lot of people that have opted to get out because it's an expensive hobby.
Oh, yeah.
I think at our peak back in the 90s, we had about 45 to 50 dogs.
Wow.
We were going through 50 plus pounds of food a day.
Oh, man.
And then you count in the supplements, you count out the time to care time out in the kennel, cleaning up and watering spending time playing with them. And so those are the things that I really enjoy doing. I'm not a huge theater guy outside of Circa. I don't attend a lot of productions around town. My niece is in a few shows around town, which I'll go see. But other than that, I like to, Tom Wall Jasper, who's worked for us for many, many years.
Wonderful
and a local legend. And Tom said a long time ago something that really resonated with me. They asked him the same question. You know, what do you like to go out and see shows around town? He said, no. He goes, I rarely ever go see shows. I would rather go home and watch a baseball game. I'd rather go home and do something that is completely unrelated to theater. And I that really resonated with me because that's kind of how I am as well. So I really enjoyed just spending time with Alex and Dad and just doing our thing. So
well, you're giving me a little bit of grace because I have to confess, I'm kind of the same way because I did a bunch of theater in the 80s and 90s, Genesius Guild primarily, and I got to do things that no kid like me should be allowed to do.
Yep.
Henry V, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Now when I watch a show, it's like, man, I wish I could be up there.
Yeah.
So for me, that's probably the problem. I should, anyway. Hey, listen, we're going to run out of time here, but Brett Hitchcock, thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
And I'll tell you, friends, when I first called Brett, he said, don't you want to talk to my dad? I said, I already did. I want to talk to you. So anyway, thank you very much. And all of my friends, please remember, you can catch the conversation twice each week on WVIK, actually. Saturday mornings, 10 o'clock, and that's right before Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. But then we have a rebroadcast every Monday evening at 8, right after Fresh Air. You can also find recent episodes at WVIK.org. Just look for us under the podcast tab. Friends, you got to get out and about today and tomorrow because the weather is just going to be fine. If you're planning to go to the Riverfront Pops concert tonight, kudos to you because, again, conditions should be just about perfect. From the campus of Augustana College, this is Kai Swanson inviting you to join us next week for the conversation on WVIK when our guest will be Ashley Johnston from the Quad Cities International Airport. Hope to join you.
Conversation on WVIK. If you missed part of it or just want to hear it again, tune in at 8 o'clock on Monday evening, right here on WVIK. Support for WVIK, Quad Cities NPR, comes from the Regional Development Authority, distributing funds from the Rhythm City Casino Resort to help make the Quad Cities a more vibrant and inclusive community. Learn more at rdauthority.org. And WVIK operations are also partially supported by a grant from the Illinois Arts Council, online at wvik.org or with the WVIK app, on the radio at WVIK 90.3 FM and HD Rock Island, and at 95.9 FM K240 DZ Dubuque. You're tuned to the Quad Cities NPR station, WVIK.